mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 402. I'm Adam, and my name is Romana Dravatna Lunda. And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
That be what we call Scrimstone, sir.
And Mary Lang.
You hangs a bit of that around your neck and you won't never suffer from the scringes, no matter how cold it be.
Yes, this you'll week... Just, you'll oh, just nearly got a word in there, didn't I? How long did that take? It was about 3 seconds in before I nearly got a word in edgewise.
Mary?
Yeah?
You missed a good one.
Kirby, you have like 20, so every one of them...
Well, I would have used this one if someone had done the Scringstone, because it applies to me. Mercy, Highness, spare these gray hairs.
Anyway. Yes, Mrs. Melrose has gone down with something. I have to say that I think it's a good thing that the Melrose family keep getting ill, because obviously it means that when they grow up, they'll be sort of... their lymph symptoms mean they won't catch a thing. So it's really quite good that... They're such a...
Therapies, they get sick so much.
They're so prone to all the little bugs that are going around at the moment. Bless them. But a good thing happened this week. We found out that Isla has come to some sense and decided, one, to like football, and two, to become a Southampton supporter. Woohoo!
Yeah. Oh, very good.
Okay, whatever.
I'm just going to adjust my microphone a tad.
There Kirby, we go. Just go along with it. You know, it's something else. Okay. Excited about.
So,
okay,
yes,
going along with it.
This week we're going to be reviewing the Rebos operation, and we're going to go. We're going to go straight into that. So I need to get my little Rebos operation window up. Oh, where's it gone? Oh, there it is. So we begin with episode one. Episode one begins with a title sequence.
Oh, really?
And it moves on a little bit, a scene within the TARDIS where the Doctor's lying on the floor with his new canine covered in said scarf. He's also got a bit of a scar on his lip from a dog bite,
yes,
which happened later in the series.
Excuse me?
I think that happens later in the series, that scar, because he does, it makes, what? Well,
not exactly. I'm having trouble with my DVD playback, but the dog itself belonged to Paul Seed, who played Graf Vindicae.
Yeah. Oh, because there's a scene later in the series where he whacks his face on the console, is there not?
Yes.
But that's related to what you're seeing here.
So they're trying to make up the scar, even though it's happened more recently here. Is that what you're saying?
Right, yes. Yeah, the Pirate Planet has the scene, I think it's the Pirate Planet, has the scene where he hits his face on the console, but in this case, you will see lots of scenes in the console room where from the first recording block and the second recording block, and in the first recording block, there's no scar, in the second recording block, there is the scar. And shifting back and forth, and so you're not seeing it as much as you see it in Pirate Planet, and that's why they came up with it in Pirate Planet.
Okay, I didn't notice that, but thank you for putting that one, Kirby. I suppose you deserve one of them.
but specifically, the dog was Paul Seed's.
Okay, anyway, so the Doctor, a door opens, the TARDIS door opens, in fact, with a bright light beaming in, and... he goes out and has a word with the White Guardian. Never did really work out what the White Guardian was. I got confused because I thought it had something to do with Time Wars. This is the time, not now. I thought it had something to do with Time Wars, where the companion he decided to give the Doctor was a Time Lady, Lord, Lady, rather than any old sort of person, really. But there you go. So
White Guardian appears as Lord President to Romana to send her on her mission. That's mentioned in this, in the conversation with both the White Guardian and Romana.
Ooh.
Is that what you're talking about?
I don't know. You tell me.
As far as who the White Guardian, and the Black Guardian are, they're apparently Eternals similar to the Eternals that we see there in the Fifth Doctor's period, but they're higher.
And they're like Q.
Yes.
Well,
but there's no actual reference to the fact that she is a Time Lady. She just talks about having passed the Academy.
Yeah, well, therefore that implies she's a Time Lady there.
Include the Doctor in her thesis, but she may be, you know, on her way to being one, but there's
She's of the Doctor species, that's what I was trying to say, and I thought you were going off the wrong. Yeah. Alright, so basically the White Guardian tells the Doctor he's decided that he has to do this mission of getting these segments of a cube, which is the key to time, and has to go on a few missions to acquire it, and he needs a companion to do this because canine's not enough. So he gets some Time Lord who looks like Mary Tam. Fair enough.
Master?
Yes.
One of the first things Romana says is the president of the Supreme Council sent me. Therefore, you can pretty much assure that she is a Time Lady, Time Lord.
Yes, she is. I know, yes. I will say, though, when I look at Mary Tam's eyes and her eyebrows, they're almost identical to Debbie Melrose's eyes and eyebrows, which makes it such a shame that she's not actually on the show today. You look at Debbie, there are pictures of Debbie available on the social media. You look at, just cut the rest of Mary Tam's face off and then cut the rest of Debbie's face off. It'll be very difficult to tell the difference.
Perhaps Debbie is a Time Lord.
It's not quite the point I was trying to make, Kirby, but if you want to go down that road, that's fine. Anyway, so yeah, they get this little magic wand thingy, which enables the TARDIS to find segments of the key to time. And then our next scene is on in a castle, really, isn't it, on a planet called Rebos, with a couple of scavenging, thievy-type people. One of them is trying desperately hard to suppress a very powerful Scottish accent and not doing it particularly well, and the other chap obviously is some sort of voice artist because he does so many different accents and voices in this story that and I never remember many of the characters' names in this story, I'm afraid. The Doctor, I got him, got Romana, got the Graf Vindicae. And Bostock. Is it Bostock? Isn't that Bostock?
Unstock.
Yeah, but it sounds like Bostock. Wasn't Bostock a character in another Doctor Who story?
And Nigel Plaskett, who played Unstock, was in Pipkins and did lots of voices for Pipkins.
You mean the one who... Yeah. Yeah, so I would have thought... You can tell he's a voice artist because of the fact that he's able to do these different... anyway, moving on. So we have this. What's the name of that actor that plays the captain? Whatever his name is, Prentice Hancock, is it? Is that right?
Yes, that's Prentice Hancock.
Yeah, because he was obviously in the Pirate Planet, playing a grumpy character there as well. So he certainly plays parts in which he never smiles and got his bottom lip sticks out a lot. Yeah. So, meanwhile, the Bostock and his... wait for the correction. Oh, didn't get it come along. And his Scottish sort of cockney...
Oh, Unstock. Okay.
Well, now how many times I can get...
I'll just let you make the mistake.
try and get themselves into the castle. And we see a little glimpse of a rubbish monster. I mean, a monster...
I like it.
A cabinet containing various jewelry, sort of crown jewel type items. It's fairly clear early on that the one of the key to time segments is actually in that cabinet, that being the Jethro, of course. But the obviously Unstock or whatever his name is are trying to steal it. Shut your face, Im. Bloke from Pipkins is trying to steal it. So the Doctor...
He's not trying to steal it.
What he's trying to do then?
He's putting it in there.
Yeah, he's putting it in.
Why is he putting it in? Sorry, I lost that one.
He's putting it in so they can go through with the whole operation. It's how they do the scam.
Yeah, they're trying to sell the planet by saying how valuable it is because it has that mineral.
Okay.
So they have to put a piece of the mineral there to convince them, you know, that it exists.
And then they take it away and do that, move on to another planet and do the same thing.
Exactly. Mm.
Correct.
It's a bit Pirate Planet-ish in some ways. No, it's not. I'm only joking. Anyway, so the Doctor and Romana arrive, and of course the Tracer helps them to find the key time quite quickly, but of course they can't get to it because
Master,
there's what?
Apparently Tom Baker did not like the Romana's costume at all.
Okay, well I'm sorry about that. Sorry.
I'm not sure why. I like it.
Anyway, what's inside the costume, to be fair. Laurie Nick says, "Hello, I was distracted by musicians, but now I'm here." And Lillian Robin says, "I'm here." Hey, Lillian, we're here. Moving on. So and then we obviously meet the Graf Bindicane, his little soldier bloke, his sort of general sidekick, whose name escapes me.
Sherlock.
Same to you, but I'm just saying the name of the... soldier escapes me.
This little feeling that Graf Bindicane and Sherlock were kind of an item.
Very good. I hadn't picked up on that one. Very good.
I mean, a little closer than just war buddies.
Yeah, I hadn't picked up on that one, Kirby, but well done. I don't think they would have...
Crutches here?
Yeah, I wouldn't think they would have been allowed to imply such a thing in 1970s television, but I think we can put our own imagination. And certainly you have done that, Kirby, because I didn't pick up on that one at all. So you're trying to say there's a bit of a gay agenda going on in Doctor Who in 1978?
Yes.
Wow. Amazing. I think Russell T. Davies would have been well happy with that. Anyway, the Doctor gets to the cabinet and tries to get into it.
Was J&T involved?
He was involved in this episode. He was the floor manager, I think. Production floor manager?
Possibly, I think so.
Production unit manager or something like that.
He was involved in the production, yeah.
And then, the Doctor or Romana gets trapped underneath the door where the rubbish monster is, and that's the end of it.
Shrivenzale or Vale, something like that.
Same to you. Anyway, right, so...
I liked it!
You liked it, okay. Right, then. So the next episode, they get away. And quite easily, funny enough. And there's lots of stuff going on. And then the captain and his team come in and sort of bow to whatever they're bowing to. I don't know what they're bowing to. Actually, oh, there's a coat of arms. Royal garb in there, isn't it? I think they're bowing to the royal garb.
Right. They're just basically venerating all the objects. It's very Ivan the Terrible sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does look medieval Russian, doesn't it?
Yes.
And
the costumes were borrowed from a Ivan the Terrible production for the BBC.
Well, no, I read that all the costuming was created just for this episode.
Oh, okay.
Mary, I do like that one. Laurie Nick says, "The Graf and his sweetie, double kisses." Oh, yeah, wasn't there a treble kiss situation going on, or was that on another program? That was another program. Anyway, right, so, yeah, there's loads of dialogue. I can't remember the Scottish bloke who can't do the Cockney accent. I can't remember his character's name. Who was that? Bald-headed chap. Ian Carmichael, I think, is it? What was his name?
You mean, what, Garon?
Garon, that's it. Thank you very much, Garon, yeah.
Garon and Unstaff are you've got two Robert Holmes double acts in this story. It's one of the things that makes it great. Garon and Unstaff and Graf Bindicane and Sherlock.
Sherlock.
Sherlock. One of your
favorite, Sherlock, yeah. It's one of your favorite programs, isn't it? Yeah.
And then, again, when Unstaff gets with Benro, they do a nice double act.
When they get with...
As well.
All right. Well, moving on. Right then. So, yeah, certainly lots of scenery chewing going on in this particular story, anyway. And some of them, some scenery chewing...
I'm
feeling
you don't like this story.
I'll be quiet. Let me finish. So, yeah. And there's lots of scheming going on with Garok. Is it Garok? No? Okay, fine. Garon. That's it. So scheming left, right, and centre, and the Doctor and Romana in the middle of it all. And She has actually, her costume she's got is, bear in mind, it's obviously quite cold in this planet. It's actually quite sensible, to be fair. And I'm just moving on a little bit, and then somebody tries to steal the thing, and then there's this scene that irritates me a great deal. I'm just going to play it. Cause it irritates, this scene here irritates me a great deal.
You and your accomplices. No one makes a fool of the Graf Vindicae and lives.
And then he says,
Shalak,
Hans,
execute them.
And then we have a stupid little zoom in on the Doctor, looking all shocked and, oh my God, how are we going to get out of this one?
That was going to be one of my quotes.
Yeah, but he looks straight into the camera and does that line. I think it's a bit too much of this, looking straight into the camera and doing stuff in this era of Doctor Who. It's becoming a bit too much of a habit. That's the theme tune of Doctor Who, because I forgot to turn the volume down. There we go. So, of course, the next episode, they escape because I think somebody dives in. No, don't kill them yet. Blah, 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 blah. And somebody steals the magic wand off Romana. And
it's the tracker, which they broke several times. Also, Master.
Yes.
There were two recording blocks for this, and the first recording block, when you first see Romana outside the TARDIS using the Geiger counter noise of the tracker, she pretty much has to stand still because there's a electric line going up the sleeve of her costume to light up the tracker. By the time they did the second recording block, which is down in the labyrinth, they figure out how to attach a battery to her so she can walk around with it.
Cool.
Ding.
There is a scene in which the Garon gets a bit of a scrape on his arm, and Dr. Romana squirts some perfume on it and heals it. Oh, okay, fair enough. Lillian Robbins says, I love this story. Maybe we should have waited to the end for that bit. And, moving on. Right, so it's quite funny because Garon and Bostock... Wait for it. A second now.
Unstuck.
There we go. They sort of side with whoever seems to be getting the upper hand at that particular time. And then the Doctor blows his dog whistle and K-9 comes out of the TARDIS. And then we meet one of the most hammed-up characters in the whole story. The little sort of the old chap with the hood who talks with a slightly wonky mouth, who has foreseen travel through the stars.
Binro,
yes, who's foreseen travel through the stars. And of course when he meets Bostock, wait for it, any second now, when he meets
Unstar,
he
you were going to let that go, Kirby, as I recall.
Of course, Unstark can't resist to actually tell him, you're right. We meet another cool character, actually, in this episode as well, the soothsayer woman.
Yes.
Facial makeup is superb, and although she can't say the word here, she goes, yaw, instead of here.
Her costume
posh.
Is based off of a Celtic got Herne the Hunter.
Looks like Maleficent to me. She's a gold Maleficent hat. But she's a really cool character.
It's a little odd to have real magic in Doctor Who, though.
Real magic is in Doctor Who. He's by the door there. Hello, magic. There he is, look. I'm holding my Elder Wand
for viewers.
Elder Wand. It's very useful, this Elder Wand. I'll show you what I can do with the Elder Wand. For the viewers only, you talk amongst yourselves a bit, Kirby, while I demonstrate what you can do. This Elder Wand is very special. You carry on, Kirby. All right, don't bother carrying on, then.
But you weren't listening to me.
No, I'm listening to you, but I'm also demonstrating in a moment, when I get it fixed up, what this particular Elder Wand can do. Magic looks a bit worried, because he's going to be at the other end of this particular... Right, watch this. Expelliarmus! Oh. Well, that seemed to do something, didn't it?
Okay, I guess I'll have to go back and watch the...
Oh, God. Laurinick says, the Seeker is my cosplay goal.
Yeah.
Lillian Robbins says, Unstoffer. Unstoffer?
Unstoff.
Unstoff. Sorry, Lillian. Yes. A point for Lillian because I couldn't say it right. So anyway, back to the episode. Sorry, were you trying to say something, Kirby?
Yes. The Seeker apparently has real magic powers because she really and truly can tell where these people are that she is trying to seek.
So what you're saying is she's got real magic powers and she's not just a clairvoyant. So you don't believe in the chances that an alien person would be clairvoyant.
There should be a scientific explanation. This is Doctor Who.
Be quiet.
She might not actually be magical.
Or she just might be one of the psychic. Not psychic, because the Doctor has psychic abilities. She just has psychic
abilities. You got me.
Anyway, right, but she's a great character.
Yes.
Despite her, and she reminds me very much of...
Master?
Yes.
Yeah. We see the Seeker, I believe, in three different scenes. In the first one, I believe her left hand is burned. In the second scene, her right hand is burned and the left hand isn't. Mm. In the third scene where she does everything, both hands have burn marks on them.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that, Kirby. She reminds me of...
From the info text.
Shut up, the Sisterhood of Khan a little bit. We have Laurie Nick saying, the bones. Is that from Star Trek?
The bones.
Anyway, so she's predicted some doom, a bit of doom. So there's a little bit of sitting around having a chat and Garon sort of befriending the Doctor while having a tankard of beer or something, I don't know. And there's one of the soldiers of the Vass thingy. Vass. I thought those were things, the little pipes that joined. I thought they were the pipes that joined the testicles to the rest of the male genitalia. Oh, that's the Vass Deferens, isn't it? Now, this is the Vass Deferens' brother, the Vass Vindicae.
Graf Vindicae.
Oh, the Graf Vindicae, yes. Anyway, I love the soldiers' costumes with those great big helmets with the slots in. They're quite cool.
Makes it easy for the Doctor to impersonate one of them.
Yes, are you jumping ahead there, Kirby? Like I said, Bostock makes friends with
on stuff.
That whatever is that the sort
Kirby,
of
you're gonna let that go.
With the little hovel bloke, what is the name again? I can't remember his name. These names are so difficult to remember.
The heretic.
Who that's the heretic bloke. Very difficult. I can remember some of the names of the story. Romana, K9, Doctor Bostock, Vass Deferens. Anyway. Yes, moving on. God, this room's full of candles. Well, I don't know. There's the Bostock and the whatever his name is go off on a little mission together. I can't remember what that mission was all about.
Anstaff and Binro.
Oh, that's the ones. Yeah, they go off.
Garon found out that the Seeker knew where Anstaff was. And so Binro, since he knows where the labyrinth or whatever the catacombs are, leads Unstaff into there to hide.
Thank you for that, Kirby.
Did you not watch the story?
Yes, of course. I've watched it loads of times. I might not have been able to get into it very well. I did indeed watch it. I mean, you say about the Seeker. It reminds me of this. Actually, oh, God, I've got an advert. That's the one thing I hate about YouTube. You can't watch what you because you've got to watch an advert. Yeah, this is a song. I thought that's quite apt where it was The Who, Doctor Who,
yeah.
The Seeker. Yeah. I thought I'd get a round of applause for that one, but didn't get one, obviously. You lot are sure. No. Right, what have we got to? Right, so we got to Lillian Robbins says, lol. Quite rightly so, Lillian. Back to the story. So they got... I didn't get that at all. So they went off on a little mission together, and stuff goes off and...
Master?
And, yes?
Do you want to know when I first saw this story?
5 minutes ago. I don't know. When you were at college or something. I don't know. When did you first see this story? When we reviewed it last time.
About 6 weeks ago.
That's the first time you ever saw it?
Yes.
Hmm. I quite enjoyed it last time. I don't know what the first few times I ever saw it. Anyway, right, moving on.
I don't like it anymore.
Oh, yeah, and there's they start wandering through corridors, and then... what happens? Oh, yes, Romana gets grabbed by the rubbish monster. And then, of course, we have another scene in the Vast Difference comes up with another Vast Difference-y line. Here we go.
He cannot escape, and no one will ever know how he tried to trick the Graf in Decay.
Oh, Graf in Decay. That was it. Sorry about that.
Good, you got it. Oh,
the, blimmin', the cliffhangers in this story were, weren't they? Right, so that led us to episode 4. It's like watching a sort of pantomime on television, this particular story. And the doctor helped her. The doctor helped her free Romana from the bite of the rubbish monster, who then scuttled off looking like a bloke in a costume.
No, master.
Oh, here we go. No, I was going to say it was like a cat in a costume.
It's like a pantomime horse. It's two blokes in a costume.
Two small blokes in a costume. Probably one of them being.
Actually, one of them is. The standard guy who is always the stunt guy.
Stuart Fell,
yes.
Yes, I thought it might be, because he's quite dinky.
He's in the back.
Meanwhile, the boss doc and the strange bloke with a funny wonky mouth are still wandering through corridors and still sort
Binro.
Of... and then the Jethro is found. They find the Jethro. And...
Jethric.
Oh, okay.
It's not that hard.
Ah, dearie me. You can understand why things are confusing.
You two wind each other up. It's really funny.
These facts are very confusing in this story. I don't really like it when I can't remember characters' names very well. It makes me very difficult. Makes it difficult for me to do a review. Why can't they make the characters' name? And it's the characters in this story are quite similar as well. You've got. Two, like you say, be quiet. We've got two, you know, teams of best friends scuffling around the catacombs of a castle with names that aren't particularly easy to remember, to be fair. And
yeah, Robert does not come up with easy names.
No.
I had the names figured out the first time I saw this. Now, very easy.
Bostock, I think, comes from a sixth Doctor story from a little chap that was turned into a wolf. I think that was Bostock. Was that a Robert Holmes story? I'm not sure if it was or wasn't.
What story?
This is from the Trial of a Time Lord, the second story in Trial of a Time Lord, where the Doctor goes a bit loopy, walks backwards into the TARDIS, goes a bit loopy, murders somebody in cold blood, but because he's under the influence, and yes? Wasn't that the one where Perry dies?
Yeah, I don't think Robert Holmes was writing stories that late.
I think he was, because he wrote the last part of Trial of the Time Lord. He wrote episode 13. So I think he may well have written was it Mysterious Planet? I can't remember what it's called. It's the one where Perry dies, anyway.
That's the first one.
That's the one where Perry dies, anyway.
The one with...
The one with her.
With friend
Brian Blessed.
Show, Nabil.
Yeah. Brian Blessed, isn't it, as well? And I'm pretty sure that...
No, it's Brian Blessed!
Yes, his little sidekick was called Bostock. Fairly sure, might be wrong. Anyway, Laurie Nick said, love that song. Yeah, The Seeker by The Who, that's what she's referring to. It's a cracking tune, isn't it? Anyway, right then. So, moving on. Oh, good grief. So the K-9 comes along, and then there's some very awkward scenes with the Romana and K-9, because they do sort of don't... Doesn't seem to work very well between them at first. But I think that might be acting, because obviously I don't think this was the first story filmed, was it, Kirby?
I
guess it was the first story.
Yeah.
Well, that would explain why there was a bit of awkwardness there. She wasn't obviously used to acting
There is no character with such a name in Mind Warp.
Well, I'll do. Well, after I'm going to Google Bostock, because I've seen it somewhere. Let's have a look. Where have I seen Bostock? It reminds me a little bit of
Bostock is a stapler company, isn't it?
Be quiet. Now you've made me Google it on the email system. That was your fault. right. What's his name again? Bostock. B-O-S-T-O-C-K. Bostock. It's probably not even spelled like that. Bostock. John Bostock. John Joseph Bostock. A footballer who played midfield at Toulouse. That's not who I'm looking for. Okay. So you know when you try and spell a type doctor and it comes out as dictator. right then, what we got here then? Okay, Bostock was the squire to Orsini, the Grand Order of Oberon. He was a squire.
Yeah.
Does that bring any bells with your memories?
No.
Right. It is the Sixth Doctor. I got that bit right. But it was in Revelation of the Daleks.
Ah.
It was Bostock. He was that chap who was in the Champions. He was his sidekick. William Gaunt, was it? It was his sidekick, Bostock. Moving back to this particular story. That was a bit of a sidetrack, wasn't it? Right then. And some stuff goes off and some more stuff goes off. And then the soothsayer says shut up a minute. The soothsayer says that only one of them will live throughout this whole thing. I'll let you say before I say the funny bit. Go on.
Since you were bringing up Revelation of the Daleks, I just wanted to remind us that Clive Swift passed on.
He did pass on a while back, and there was somebody else who died recently as well, connected to Doctor Who. It wasn't even on the... we didn't do news, did we? Or did we? Well, somebody died Doctor Who-related, didn't they? And I had to remind... Windsor Davis. Windsor Davis passed away. Wasn't even a thing. And he played Toby in The Power of the Daleks, was it? Or was it the...
I believe we spoke about him. The thing is that...
I can't remember speaking about him.
Died after our last recording.
Yeah, but I don't remember talking about Windsor Davis, because I would have gone, shut up, to you. Because Windsor Davis' favourite character's catchphrase was, shut up, very loudly. In It Ain't Half Hot Mum. That's a comedy series. You can Google it. It's on YouTube. BBC. Wakey, wakey, Kirby.
I'm here.
Good. Right, so then we come to the scene where she says, only one but lives. So I think the Graf Vindicae shoots her. Just to
you got the name right. I knew it.
And
All an act.
All an act, is it?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, that's what these people are attempting to do. And then his best mate gets done in, and the Graf Vindicae will avenge the death of what he won. And then K-9 blasts through a rock so as Romana can get her stick back, and the Jethro for that matter. He's not called Jethro! They go back to the TARDIS, and Orcron tries to get the Doctor... to steal the Jethro, back off the Doctor. But the Doctor steals it back off him before going to the TARDIS, and the magic wand changes the Jethro into a bit of a strange shape, which is apparently part of a cube. And that therefore ends the Rebos operation. Now, I'll tell you what I thought about the Rebos operation, shall I? Right. As I've said through this, I just find the names difficult to relate to, the too complicated for me. I like sort of easy to remember names. I didn't like the inter-camera stuff. I did pick up and it irritated me was Bostock, not Bostock, the chap who had the funny voices.
Stuff.
Who?
And stuff.
Yeah, I just felt it was a bit of a platform for his ability to do voices, but he wasn't a particularly good actor. I felt that. I felt it was very atmospheric. Even though you could see that Mary Tam was being very careful when trying to make out that rock wouldn't move. it was fairly believable and well lit and atmospheric as far as the castle goes, and quite claustrophobic in some ways, because you do feel that there wasn't anywhere else for everybody to go. The characters were pretty good, quite enjoyable. Again, it was a very sort of... This is Graham Williams' era, isn't it? Very sort of trying to be a bit more comedic with Doctor Who. I didn't find any of the parts of it scary. I didn't find any of the part of it's thinking, oh my god, how are they going to get out of this one? But on the other side of the thing, it actually was quite good fun. But I'm not sure it was quite good fun in the right way. That's the thing for me. Yeah, it was sort of fairly good, but there was bits that were irritating. It was okay. What did you think about it, Kirby?
I think you said that Lillian said, I love it. I love this thing, too.
Do you?
I had not seen it before, and I'm so glad that we're doing the entire Key to Time, because I've only seen two of the segments of the Key to Time.
Yeah, well, there are six of them, Kirby.
Excuse me?
There's six segments, not two.
I've only seen before this most recent watch by me and Fred. I'd only seen two segments.
No, but there's six segments, dear.
I watched all of them.
Have you finished yet?
I'm confused by what you're trying to say.
There are six segments to The Key to Time.
Yes.
You've seen two stories, surely, not segments.
Two of the stories.
Oh, there we go. Did I clear that up for you?
Huh?
Did I clear that up for you all right?
I'd seen Stones of Blood, and I'd seen Pirate Planet.
Who are?
I thought that you communicated at one time that you and Fred had sat and watched all of the stories in this Key to Time series.
Yes, starting about 6 to 8 weeks ago.
Oh, so
Kirby,
all right.
Before Fred and I sat down.
Never mind.
My entire Doctor Who watching experience.
Never mind.
I've only seen Stones of Blood and Pirate Planet.
Okay, thank you. So... On the subject can I get a word in?
I absolutely loved this story. It was a great deal of fun. Yes, it was overacting, but it had some of the best writing from Doctor Who from Robert Holmes with the double acts. He managed to do three double acts, like I said. Some great back and forth. I didn't mind the accents. The whole Scringstone thing, I was rolling on the floor laughing because it was just so much fun. So I'm obviously the odd man out between you and da da da. Go ahead.
Hang on, I'm ready yet. I haven't got my priority jingle folder open yet. So carry on talking a bit, Kirby. Oh, by the way, you said about the Pirate Planet, didn't you? You referenced. Well, why? Why are pirates pirates? Why are pirates pirates?
You're setting me up for a joke.
I'm just asking the question. Why are pirates pirates? Because they are.
Because of what?
Because they are. Anyway, Kirby sort of teed it up nicely. Is Mary.
Well, I didn't exactly hate it. I actually enjoyed it mostly because it was very good writing, and I loved, you know, the whole production. I love the costumes.
Yeah.
I love that everybody were able to put out like a really full blown character, which doesn't always happen in Doctor Who. My only problem, really, but I want to say that, like, you, Adam, there wasn't much to be scared of, you know, so it was not one of these, you know, edgy, scary. It was all written for humor. So recognizing that, I did enjoy the humor in it. But my biggest issue was with Mary Tam, and it may not have been entirely her fault, because her part was written for a generic companion.
Yeah.
Because they were trying to talk Liz Sladen into coming back.
Oh.
And after considering it for a while, Liz eventually turned them down because she thought it would not help her career to be too tied in to Doctor Who. So then they had to audition. So this was all being written, you know, during these talks with Liz and the auditions. And they had over 100 people show up to audition for Romana. And I guess the director just took a liking to Mary Tam. But she didn't have a lot of time, you know, to like really learn the part and all that. And a lot of the stuff that was that they thought was going to be lines for Liz, you know, became lines for Romana. And she irritated the entire crew, actually, with her costume. She loved her costume. And she came in to the costume department saying that the colors of her costumes, which is true throughout this whole series, are dictated by her astrologer. So the first one had to be white. It had to be a white costume. So they had to come up with, you know, something like this. But it irritated everybody because her being so white and her being so in love, you know, with this costume, they felt was very distracting to the crew, and they felt like to the people that were going to be watching this too. And it was. I mean, we all, you know, just love this costume of Romana's because she shows it off so well. But this was new for her at television acting. So she didn't really know the ropes, and not being given great lines, the combination of the two where she's kind of learning on the job and not being given a great character to play, she comes off as pretty wooden in my mind. So I don't care for her much. And I believe that this bled into the next story as well, that the next story was being written, of course, while they're filming this story. And so most of the part for Romana is written for a generic companion. So we'll see. But yeah, that's how I am. I'm kind of on the fence about this one. I enjoyed it, but, you know, I have the same reservations you do about it, Adam.
In that case, it's a pretty good story. So there's a lot worse Doctor Who out there. But yes,
there's worse ones out there.
do feel that Mary Tam was not quite there. But she was pretty, yeah. So what did anybody really
say? She was pretty, yeah.
And she had Debbie Melrose's eyes, so what else? Yes, Kirby?
I since I have now seen all of The Key to Time, I love the way that they did the bookending of her costume. So she also had a white costume, not exactly the same, but close to it in Armageddon fashion.
No spoilers at all there, Mary. Sorry about listeners and viewers.
I say they might not have deliberately been bookending anything. Her astrologer might have been telling them what to do. Well, she was not well received.
Okay, right. So we have anything come through? I've got something come through. Not a lot come through on the email system, but we can do this.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
The Reboss Operation by Robert Holmes. The Doctor is given a mission by Colonel Sanders. He has to collect 6 pieces of chicken from around the universe and place them in a bucket. They will then become the Key to Time, which will restore peace and harmony and other good stuff to space and time. The key must not fall into the hands of McDonald's. Tom Baker went to see a man about a dog during the filming of this story, and the dog bit his lip. Probably did not like the way the programme was turning into the Tom Baker show.
Yeah, and that's another point I forgot to say.
Garon the con man is from Hackney Wick in London, but claims to be from the north. The Doctor has a new assistant,
Romana Dvaratnalunda,
played by Mary Tam from Bradford. Mary is from the north. Reboss entered its ice time season. So did much of the USA. I hope our listeners are safe. A piece of scringstone might help. Binra the Heretic is starstruck and believes in aliens. He's delighted to find his theory is true. The Graf Vin de Kay chews up the scenery until the Doctor kills him. David Tennant would never do that. The Doctor gets the scringstone. The con man gets robbed. Most of the others die. An enjoyable first story of the year.
Romana Dvaratnalunda
is a worthy successor to Leela. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. What do we think about the Doctor's cold-blooded murder of the Graf Vin de Kay?
Yeah.
Is that it? Okay, fine.
By the way, to Ian, it is going to be 65 degrees on Tuesday here.
65 degrees centigrade?
I don't know what that is in Celsius.
You can't live in that sort of Oh, I see. You're talking about Fahrenheit.
35 degrees. Okay.
You were talking about Fahrenheit, weren't you? That's a bit silly, really. 65
degrees. Or 65 degrees going down to 35, but still, it is extremely warm here in the south.
Okay.
Oh, no. We're very cold and snowing here.
Right. Yeah, you know what you're going to get because of that, don't you, in the long run?
What?
A rather huge hurricane, I would imagine. Right, let's see what we've got here. Kirby Bart.
Poor Julia is in Iowa. It's below zero.
Is it? Oh, good Lord. Isn't that where Captain Kirk was born?
I can't remember. Yes, she's been there.
Has she been to the birthplace of Captain Kirk?
Yes.
She's seen the little blue plaque on his house?
She's been to the monument, and there's an Enterprise, and she brought me a...
communicator?
She brought me several things, including a...
Tricorder?
A mouse pad that's a red mouse pad. It says, live fast, die red.
I'll tell you what, on the subject of Star Trek, we'll just touch on it for the moment, that just currently watching Star Trek Discovery, and it's fab. Still maintaining a high standard of brilliance, is all I can say with that.
And of course,
By way of contrast, the Orville, still maintaining an even higher standard of brilliance in storytelling.
Love the Orville.
Yes, I just watched. We just had the episode where we get the new officer, the new what's her name's left, isn't she? The one who's really strong. Oh God, what's her name? Anyway, we get the new one, and the captain goes on the holiday with what he thinks is his sort of bit on the side woman, but it turns out to be. It's a fantastic story. And then we had another one where this is probably the best one I've seen of the story in regards to writing and thinking through, where they go on the planet as a first contact thing, and they banish a whole load of people because of astrology and stuff like that. It's so clever.
Yes, it is.
It's what a series that is. Oh my God. But yeah. Kirby Butler Sloan posted something about
a mustache.
Yeah, he posted something about was it a request for feedback?
Yes, I've posted two requests for feedback. So okay. Don't know what all's in each one of them.
I'll have to look at the one that says the most recent one. Well, it looks like the most recent one. It's highest up the list.
The most recent one has Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, that's most recent. Jeff Walter says Colonel Sanders on his afternoon off. Laurie Nick said give it an 8.75, only points off due to cheapness of the Guardian's set dressing and the monster suit. Alan T. Butcher said Garon's suit was not that bad. Graham Sheridan said the perfect Uncle Tom season with the best Fred, Romana. And Jeff Walter said, I won't be sending feedback. I don't like any of this season. I'll still listen, though. I should hope so, too, Jeff.
And let me go down and see if there's any feedback on my previous requests.
Well, it probably is.
Probably. It's about a week ago.
It probably is. Let's go back in time.
And some people also commented on my repetition of your saying what happened to Isabella. How is she, by the way?
Oh, she's all right. I mean, she's much, much better now. She's still got her fingers strapped together, but she's recovering well. So she'll probably be playing badminton after the half-term holidays again. So it was a very, very tiny fracture on her on one of the joints of her middle finger. So
okay, Oh, there's no feedback at all on my original request for feedback. So never mind that.
So there's really not a lot then, is there? Nope.
Well,
okay.
There's some on the... Are people talking about the story? No, not really. I guess not.
No, well, we'll have to leave it at that. Obviously, it was an underwhelming response to this particular story. So that allows me to move on to the next segment of the show, which is...
What, there's no...
There's no what?
What about Alan T. Butcher?
I haven't got... I'll just check my email.
You should.
Check an email. Email being checked. Oh, it's just arrived. Bad luck, Mary. It's just arrived.
Oh, dear.
Right then. So I'll just see if I can find you on Facebook so I can send it to you. Congratulations. I know it's something you've been particularly looking forward to. And I hope you've been practicing your pronunciation of Romano Dravatna Lunda. Have you been doing that? Because I've got a funny feeling there will be mention of this in this particular line of text. Right, here we go. Let's see if I can get the copy function to work on this. There you are. There's the message thread. There's you. Here it comes. There it goes.
Master?
Yes?
Did you like any of the keto time?
I'm not going to say whether I liked it or not. It was Jeff Waddle who said he didn't like it. But I'm not going to say whether I like it or not. Thank you very much. Okay.
Well, wait and see, Mr. Spoiler. I'm not going to tell you which ones, but I can tell you that there are a couple of stories that I did not think were 100% top-notch.
Okay, well, we'll come to that in a later broadcast.
Thing I did neglect to say is that the one thing I did enjoy, because the last season was really going down the tubes in terms of being the Tom Baker show.
Yeah.
One nice thing about this story is that he was not the center of attention in this one, but a lot of other characters were given, you know, chances.
Okay. Yes, they told him, the BBC told them to kind of pull Tom back a little bit from the Tom Baker comedy half hour.
Well, it didn't last very long, did it?
Again. It happens again later, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
It's inevitable.
Before we move on to Mary reading Auntie Butcher, we have Laurie Nix saying, I actually liked her austere time lady acting. It was a change from the human companions. I liked the first scene with her hair up. They got rid of that pretty quickly. And then Alan T. Butcher said, to be clear, I didn't feed back on the lingerie. Okay. Because Laurie Nick said earlier on, it was lingerie.
Oh, okay.
What was?
I can't remember. Because I forgot to read that big bit out at the time. Mary, let's listen to Alan T. Butcher's findings on the Rebos operation.
Oh, all right. This is
pull
from
this
Alan
handle out T. and lean back and listen.
Hustle the Garen and Unstoff years, or Graf Vindicated, Steffi wins at Rebosian tennis.
Rebosian tennis.
Rebosian?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the planet Rebos.
Rebos. Oh, yes. You're right. Dear, yes, we talked about these difficult names. dear 20 megabyters, the Rebos operation is, of course, a closely studied explication of the doctor's subtransitory experiential hypertoroid-induced condition. Is it hypertoroid or hypertoroid? I don't know. Hypertoroid-induced condition, aggravated by multi and pathological tensions. The placement of the action in a primitive culture, which sits within a galaxy of interstellar activity, of which it is incongruously unaware, but to which possibilities have only really occurred to one of those dismissed as the lowest amongst them, clearly hints at the nature of the doctor's malaise, quickly noted by Romana Avatrilunda. The doctor's successful switcheroo, technical term, leaves him with the prized Jethric, which is a part of the elemental power he needs to find perhaps indicates his propensity to overcome his shortcomings. It should be noted that Binro was right. We also learn that a reporter present at the time of the first Nestine invasion, who later went to Zeta Minor, and who also donned a blonde wig to pose as a Thal on Spiridon, ended up here on Rebus, guarding the crown jewels as the Shreve captain. All in all, the Rebos operation is a very entertaining start to this innovative era in the show's history. The series-long arc established here somewhat curtails the normal, very open format of Doctor Who and the elemental and supernatural character of the white-slash-black guardian paradigm may seem to fly in the face of the rational scientific quality of the Who universe. However, this does not get in the way of Robert Holmes's talent for great dialogue and a solid plot, and the new dynamic of the TARDIS crew gets off to an impressive start. This serial is perhaps 22 episodes too short, as there would advantages to having the masterful Robert Holmes write the whole series. Next up, Doctor Who and Long John Cybernetic, or Polly Puts K-9 On. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Yay. Thank you very much indeed, Alan. I will point out that, of course, after Kirby trying to think that I didn't like the Key to Time series, I've made it quite clear that The Pirate Planet is one of my favourite stories, if not my favourite story of all time. Okay.
I thought City of Death was your favourite story.
I like both.
Yes,
but
good.
The Pirate Planet, I think, edges it slightly, because it's slightly less farcical. Okay. And it wins it via the scene in which, when the Doctor discovers, and I would obviously slightly spoilerific, when the Doctor discovers that they've been shrinking planets and killing everybody on them, his reaction to that is absolutely gold, and that wins it for me. It's just brilliant. But I'll have to say that again next week, because I've never made it a secret
and we've
how
done
much
that
I love
story,
it.
I believe, twice.
Yeah, the 13th Doctor did it, didn't she? It was done in this series.
Saying,
it was where?
I'm saying that we've done
Pirate
a 20
Planet.
Megabyte of Pirate Planet. Let me see. I'll tell you in a second.
So that, just make sure to double check.
Oh, just once.
That concludes feedback for this particular...
October 2013.
Okay, thank you, Kirby. Okay. Doctor... that's how you spell Doctor. Doctor Who News .net. Okay, let's see what we've got going on. Because we have glossed over a couple of passings recently that are important to the world of Doctor Who. What I want to do... because I didn't do it, and I should really try and make a sort of a screen grab of this, because it is wonderful. Bear with me. Carry on. Just talk amongst yourselves a minute. I've got to do this, because this is the episode I should do it, and I should have done it last time. Or did we not record since Windsor Davis died? I can't remember. No? Okay. I'll just talk amongst myself then. When I said talk amongst yourselves, what that actually means is you blimmin' talking amongst yourself, for goodness sake. Right then. As in going talking while I try and... why is it not? Oh, here we go. This is it. Have a listen. Kirby?
What?
Are you listening?
Master?
Right. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
That was Windsor Davis.
I'm not sure what it was.
It was Windsor Davis going, hang on, let's take it back to the beginning again.
Shut up, okay.
Did you hear that time?
What's he saying?
I'll do it again. Shut up, he's saying very loudly.
Oh, shut up, okay.
Yeah, he's shouting it very loudly, as in the Sergeant Major Williams character from It Ain't Half Hot Mum. Back to news. We actually haven't started news yet, because I had to segue onto that bit. Yeah, because we did about W. Morgan Shepherd dying. We've done Utopia. We've done not a lot of news, is there? The War Master stuff. There's a load of vinyl Doctor Who records. The Dalek Master Plan coming out on vinyl. And the final ratings for Resolution, which was 7.13 million. That was a great story, wasn't it? Celestial Toy Room Annual, we talked about that. Oh, God. David Tennant does a podcast with... he's got his own podcast, hasn't he?
Yep.
So he's done it's got a picture of him with Olivia Colman. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, Tennant, because Olivia Colman is nominated for an Oscar, can now, whenever he says her name, can count it as a name drop, really, I suppose, can't he? Olivia Colman also plays Her Majesty the Queen in the next series of The Crown. The Crown is one of the best programmes on TV.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Because it is so respectful, and quite rightly so, to Her Majesty the Queen herself. And... I wouldn't say it's particularly respectful of the rest of the royal family, but it does paint the Queen in the light that she should be painted in. She's in her late 90s, everybody, and still working. Right, then, moving on.
Did you say Olivia was going to play the Queen?
She plays the Queen in the next series of The Crown,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, Okay, great.
Fantastic, isn't it? So she'll obviously, the Queen will be doing a bit of crying, because that is Olivia Colman's forte, crying. She's particularly good at it, at crying on screen. But she was in a lot of very good comedy programs before she was in Doctor Who. And a very good comedy actress as well. So I can't remember what she was in, but Kirby will find out. It's probably, if you go to the Olivia Colman Wikipedia page and just look at her early career, there's a particular comedy series she was in, Brilliant, and I think there are clips available on YouTube. The Doctor Who in iPlayer Top 10. Here we go. Hang on. This gives me an opportunity to go back in time. By the way, I did actually ask Mr. Ben Shoveler if he'd come back on the show. He said he might do from time to time. What?
You skipped the that book about the making of Love and Monsters?
What? The Black Archive, Love and Monsters?
Yes.
Well, you can talk about that while I get this thing going then.
Well, it's a book about the detail, looks in detail, the making of the 10th Doctor story, Love and Monsters. I have to say, doesn't have a lot to do with that book, but the kid who designed the Absorbolov has his own YouTube channel where he has discussed, now he's no longer a kid, where he's discussed the whole thing about his view of Love and Monsters, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, for those of you that have time to read novelizations and books and stuff, that would be fantastic. I'm not one of these people. If I was able to or had time to read and stuff, I'd be still an author. Well, obviously I am an author. I'd be continuing my role as an author, but I have no time to do that anymore, I'm afraid. Sorry. But yeah, go for it. It's good. All right then, okay. Excuse me. Something just repeated on me there. Very nice roast chicken dinner that Deb did for me earlier on. So we're looking at the Doctor Who in iPlayer Top 10. At number 10, Matterday Live, Sweden versus England. At number 9, Bing Show. Number 8, Our Girl, the Nigeria, Belize and Bangladesh Tours Episode 1. Number 7, Dynasties, Chimpanzee. Number 6, Cry, Episode 1. Number 5, Keeping Faith, Episode 1. Number 4, Doctor Who, The Woman Who Fell to Earth. Number 3, McMafia, Episode 1. Number 2, Killing Eve, Nice Face. And number 1, Bodyguard, Episode 1.
Thank you. I missed that.
Did you? Yeah. Or you want me to do it again?
No, no, those were the days. I used to love listening to your rankings.
Again, as I had to do it all myself, there was no time for me to look through the rankings. Besides, we're probably not even anywhere near the top 20 of the Doctor Who podcast now, because there are about a million. There are more Doctor Who podcasts out there than there are episodes of Doctor Who, and that's saying something. Clive Swift has passed away at the age of 82. He, of course, played a rather sort of slimy character in The Revelation of the Daleks, but he's better known as Richard Bucket in the television series Keeping Up Appearances.
Okay.
Bucket, dear. Richard Bucket. He was pronounced Bouquet by his snobby wife, Hyacinth Bouquet.
Oh, yeah.
Doctor Who Legacy to close. Tiny Rebel Games have announced that the online game Doctor Who Legacy will close in 2 weeks' time, as of the 3rd of February. So it's on the verge of closing now, really. Doctor Who Legacy was launched in 2013. A free-to-play game to coincide with the 50th anniversary. Over time, the game has evolved to include every incarnation of the Doctor from the television series, including the War Doctor, and well over 200 companions from both classic and modern Doctor Who.
I've never heard of it before.
Oh, I've heard of it, but it's not a thing I really do. It's something that perhaps they should have considered bringing out on PlayStation 4 or something like that, but it's still quite a sad thing that they're trying to gradually take bits of Doctor Who away from us again. As things go.
I first heard about it when Jason posted about it earlier. I think it was last night.
Yeah. Doctor Who 13th Doctor number 4. This week's release from Titan Comics is the fourth in the series of the 13th Doctor comics. So that's good, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Did you know? No, I don't want to think a bit about this now. That Stan Lee wrote some Doctor Who comic stuff. Did you know this?
Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I know it as well, so we can shut up about it now, can't we? Rosa okay. wins Visionary Arts Award. Doctor Who episode Rosa has been awarded the Visionary Arts Organization Award for Television Show of the Year. Well, that's good, isn't it? Needs to win a few more awards, really. So there you go. Fantastic stuff. Tonight, here in Great Britain, in fact, in about 55 minutes' time, the British Academy Film Awards begin, and I'll be sitting down watching that eagerly, hoping that Bohemian Rhapsody wins some good awards, because it deserves to. It's the best film I've seen for a long, long time. Most inspirational film, at least, I've seen for a very long time indeed. And the music's fab, and so I'm hoping, among all hope, that that happens. I have now my full collection of... sort of 5.5 inch scale Doctor Who figures, because my 13th Doctor arrived this week. I didn't get into too much trouble with Deb over it. I think she perfectly understands I need to be a bit of a completionist in the 5.5 figure front, so my whole mantelpiece now adorned by Doctors. I would actually like to have an alternative 8th Doctor. I've still got the, you know, the 8th Doctor via the sort of movie version rather than the 7 minute thing we got a few years ago. But I'm still quite proud of my collection of Doctors. That was leading me on to the 13th Doctor Funko Pop is coming out. So I know that all these Funko Pops come out, then they go. So I've got on order a 13th Doctor Funko Pop. In fact, I bought two, because I'm hoping that one of them will become rare, so then I'll get the money back for the both of them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You can't get a lot of Doctor stuff at face value on any medium in regards to Funko Pops. But there are a couple of characters being released along with the 13th Doctor, but I can't remember what they are. Yeah, sorry about that. And of course, I very nearly bought a Sheldon to go along with my Raj and Leonard ones, because on eBay there was one going for about £45, which is around about the price I paid for the ones that I've got, the collector's items I have on my shelf there, because Sheldon characters seem to go, if you look on Amazon, for probably over £100. So I thought grabbing that for £45 was, even though it was £15 when they first came out, was a bit of a bargain. And I'm still waiting, apparently next month, my full collection of Queen. That's a band that used to play music in Great Britain. Queen Funko Pops. And I think they will be a collector's item. They're going to be arriving quite soon, so that's quite exciting. Right, then I suppose we should talk about sponsors.
Talking about acquisitions, Laurie Nix and I both caved in and bought ourselves a TARDIS coffee presses. I don't know if you saw her postings.
A TARDIS coffee press?
Coffee press, yeah.
What's that do then?
Well, you put the grounds in it, and you put the hot water, and you let it steam, you know, or soak through and all, and then there's a plunger that you plunge through the, so that all the grounds stay at the bottom, and you pour your coffee out.
I'm a tea man, you see. It doesn't equate in my mind.
She uses it for tea. I use it for coffee.
Oh, she uses it for tea. Good for her.
She's got a little posting on her Facebook page about how she does it with tea.
Anyway, Laurie Nix says, I suggest Adam dress as a pirate for the next few weeks. Well, it's not actually. We've missed National Dress as a Pirate Day, Laurie. So
talk is a...
I beg your pardon?
Talk like a pirate day.
Oh, talk like argh, but that's a while back, wasn't it? And then she said, Laurie Nix was a huge Doctor Who legacy fan. Sad to see it go. Oh. Yeah. Back to... you were going to say something, Kirby. I beg your pardon.
No, I don't.
Good, that makes a change. Right then, so on to whoone.co.uk, another company that I need to send an invoice to.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
No, it's a company I need to send an invoice to. I've got a lot on my mind. I might try and remember to do that tomorrow. They've got, amongst their collection of publications, Doctor Who magazine 535. And it's got, looks like the Melker on the front cover, actually. You can get that much quicker if you order it through Who Won, wherever you are in the world. The 13th Doctor action figure, woohoo, is also available. I don't think they'll bring many other versions of that particular figure out. So, and also, I don't think they'll do many more runs of them, because all the action figures they bring out now become collector's items fairly quickly. But there you go. Well, you can also still get the Doctor Who magazine 534, the special of a yearbook for 2019, amongst other bits and bobs. Let's see what's coming soon. Lots of big Finnish things. Black Thursday and Power Game is a sixth Doctor story, along with that's me dropping my token, along with Devil in the Mist, and which is, like I said, a fifth Doctor story, and River Song, Diary of River Song 5, which looks like it's got Missy on the cover. The First Doctor Adventures 3, that is quite interesting. I saw a thing about that, in which I think Carol Ann Ford's in it, and the actress that played Susan in the Adventures of Space and Time, there's a picture of her on the cover, along with some of the actors from Adventures of Space and Time, including obviously the chap who played the Doctor in that story. What's his name again? Who played the Doctor? First Doctor? No, not William Hartnell. He's dead.
Oh, David Bradley.
Thank you, Mary. Well done. So that's going to be quite interesting, isn't it? The First Doctor stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially with the fact that they decided to rope in the cast that were pretending to play the actors in Adventures of Space and Time. I wonder if they managed to rope in Toby. I think he might have mentioned this before, but he didn't, obviously. Matt Craterra is coming out on DVD. I presume that is the animated version.
Yes.
I must buy that when it comes out.
Me too.
Resolution, which is a Doctor Who story on DVD. Not available yet, but available soon. And Series 8 Syndicate Master Plan 1. And Series 8 Syndicate Master Plan 2. So it was always lots of big finisher really churning out the stuff at the moment.
Is someone syndicating that or something?
Was that supposed to be funny or something?
Yes.
Well, it wasn't. Right then, let's have a look at Lavarzik. Now, I would think that things would be awful in the universe if Lavarzi decided to stop making Fourth Doctor scarves, but let's have a look, make sure they're still making them.
I'm
otherwise
looking up on my shelf and looking at my three Doctor Who scarves, including my wonderful Lavarzi one.
Yep, well, the sweater, the Christmas sweater, is still available, along with shorter versions of said scarves and Pandorica open gloves. They're new, aren't they? I remember seeing those. It's a pair of gloves with the Pandorica opens picture on it, painted by the actual Vincent Van.
Yes, well done.
And obviously, TARDIS tie, that's quite pretty. The Fourth Doctor scarf tie, sold out. Paisley hanky of the Seventh Doctor. And umbrellas still available, not the one I've got with the question mark handle. And of course, the very pretty question mark tank top. The trouble wearing these. Now, especially the question mark tank top, which I love, wear it for too long, they start going all bobbly and fluffy. So the best thing I'm supposed to do is just hardly ever wear it. Maybe only wear it when cosplaying the Seventh Doctor. So there we go. That's all your news and items of, sponsorship items. And what else we got here? We've got Lillian Robbins said, Adam, I had to point out you missed something that I did post about Call the Midwife before you did. Oh, yes. Somebody, because I thought I was being clever, the next day I recorded the bit of Call the Midwife that obviously had them all watching the Aztecs. And I was quite excited by this because it actually showed them watching Doctor Who in 1964. And I thought that was lovely. To even imagine people sat around the telly watching it, even though half the nurses weren't really interested in it. It was beautifully done, a lovely little homage to Doctor Who, and I thought I'd film it with my phone. But somebody had already done it. I should have known this. Doctor Who fans are people that have to be there first every single time, don't they? But never lie. Never mind. I'll have to live with that. And what she say? Somebody, okay. And then Lillian Robbins said, I didn't mean to out-pedant you, Kirby, sorry.
Really? Okay.
Oh, my.
I don't think...
Is it possible to do so?
I don't think that ever needs an apology, to be fair. Yeah. Okay, right then, that's who we are. So today is the 10th of February. Next week is the 17th of February, when we will be reviewing The Pirate Planet, and hopefully Debbie Melrose will not be ill. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. Yeah, I know Ben Shoveler won't be on next week because he texted me to say, and I quote, this is Ben Shoveler of fame, not fame, the film fame with, you know, the famous at being a radio presenter and stuff. He said, look, I said, I'll make appearance occasionally. And I said, good, when? He said, when I'm free. I said, any ideas when? He said, can't tonight or next week, maybe a fortnight. So that would be quite good. Sadly, though, in a fortnight, I'll be working, so I won't be able to do it then anyway. So isn't that typical?
Really?
Yeah, so no show on the 24th, but we will be there next week, The Pirate Planet, on the 17th of February, barring broken fingers and stuff like that. So,
no quiz because there's too few of us?
No quiz because I want to watch the BAFTAs.
Oh.
Well, sorry about that, Kobe. It would only be hang on, sorry.
Yay, no quiz.
Yeah, I wonder if you've got any questions about it.
It's like being given a snow day.
Speaking of quizzes, for next week, do I either sit the quiz out or do I just, I won't listen to the last time and try to remember things?
Well, I feel that I should abandon doing quizzes about the things we're watching anyway. I quite like my little box of random questions about Doctor Who because Mary seems to do a lot better under those circumstances.
Under what circumstances?
Well, you won last time.
He's talking about doing it from the
Trivial Pursuit.
The Trivial Pursuit.
Oh, golly, I hate those questions. I really do okay
with them.
I haven't done well other than that one time.
Well, I'll decide at a later date what sort of mood I'm in next week. But anyway...
The thing is that it has been 5 years since we did Pirate Planet. So, and I promise I won't go back and listen.
Yeah, I don't know why you would anyway.
It doesn't sound very convincing, Kirby, the way you're saying that.
I won't.
It doesn't sound particularly convincing.
For one thing, I don't have time.
Convincing.
I'm going to be so darn busy.
Oh, here we go. Pretend excuses. So until then, thanks for persevering with the show. See you again next week. Goodbye,
Fancy Pants.
Bye.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.